do you think the primary challenges are facing women in post-conflict and transitional settings?
I think that one of the most critical issues for women in post-conflict settings is defining what citizenship means for them in that new post-conflict era. Conflict and periods of war notoriously change how people view their relationship to the state, depending on who is perpetrating violence and which groups are involved. But I think redefining what citizenship means is really important, especially for women, when peacetime comes. And this is about not simply de jure citizenship, but also de facto citizenship. So not just what's written into a new constitution, but what's actually experienced by women on a day-to-day basis in terms of how they relate to the state and the central government apparatus. So this is about determining rights, but also duties. It's about exploring how they, as citizens, interact with the state and what recompenses, for example, they're able to claim for injustices committed against them, for example, during wartime. So I think carving out a space for women or for themselves is really important in a post-conflict environment. And how they do that is critical to determining what it means to be a female citizen as peacetime progresses.
And how have the use of quotas in Afghanistan increased women's participation in peace and security?
Well, quotas were introduced at the beginning of the bond process, which was sort of the post-conflict state-building process that started after the Taliban were ousted in 2001. And they were the product of international and national women's group pressure on the interim government. And they introduced a 27% quota in the lower house of parliament, and at the time a 25% quota in the provincial councils, so that's the sort of local government bodies in Afghanistan. This was a landmark achievement, really, for women in Afghanistan, because never before had they been able to have so much space in these decision-making bodies. And so it was really hailed as being a landmark achievement, and yet 10 years down the line, it's difficult to see in some senses what those women have achieved in terms of promoting women's gender interests for women in general. However, what you see now is nobody really questioning women's right to that space in Parliament, whereas it was quite a shock to have so many women back in 2005. So I think you've seen a real change in attitude towards women's presence in Parliament, at least, even if that hasn't necessarily translated into tangible gains for women in general, necessarily. And this is particularly interesting at the local level with the provincial councils, because women are able to gain a lot more public notoriety, public influence at the local level, even though provincial councils are relatively weak and they don't have a huge amount of oversight over, for example, the provincial budget or the development projects that go on in the province. It still gains women a new sense of status and access to the political sphere, which is often used as a stepping stone then to get a seat in Parliament later on. So it's really important, I think, that these quotas are maintained. At the local level, they've actually been reduced recently from 25% to 20%. And this was seen as a problem for women, that it would discourage women from competing. But actually, the provincial council elections that happened last month showed that it didn't really deter women from standing. There's not much difference in terms of the numbers of women that actually won seats as a result of the changed quota. So that in itself is a really positive sign.
And what's one change the international community needs to make to better support women in post-conflict and transitional settings?
Well, firstly, I think that in Afghanistan specifically, there's been an awful lot of funding from donors to a number of different aid and development projects, and women have been a sort of a trophy project, because women in Afghanistan are notoriously, or have notoriously suffered a lot of subjugation in the past under different regimes. And so using women as a way to gain kudos, for example, in the international community, I think has become quite a problem. It's a very sexy project to be able to talk about. And I think that actually a lot less funding over longer periods of time would be a lot more beneficial to women's groups in Afghanistan, particularly if that funding is core funding and not project-oriented and not determined by donor agendas, but by women's groups themselves, to allow them the sustainability and the guarantee that their projects will be able to continue longer than a sort of six-month or a year rotation. And I think also we need to think about how to measure progress on promoting women's access to political influence, for example, and not use proxies like, for example, school enrollment for girls, which is generally quite a superficial measure because whether girls enroll in school is not an indicator of whether they stay enrolled in school, whether they actually attend classes, or whether they stay beyond primary level. So I think we need to think about how we measure progress in this, or what progress actually is, and how we measure it in these circumstances, and look at much more substantive measures. So not simply looking at how many women attend a particular workshop, but which women attend and what they then do afterwards, how they use the skills that they've learnt in that workshop. Those need to be paid attention to much more than they have been so far.